The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
Hey everyone, another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you. We got our usual crew today. This is Ruben speaking. Patrick, say hello.
Hello, I'm Patrick.
Basil.
Hey everyone.
Ilya.
Hello.
Today we're going to be discussing a classic bit of animation called The Adventures of Prince Ahmed from 1926. Directed by
Lotte Reiniger.
Thank you, Ilya.
Bring in the German.
That's what I'm here for.
This was the international flavor. We established that way back on the Battleship podcast.
Yes.
Eight, 19 podcasts ago. 19 podcasts ago. Okay, so this was my pick. The plot of this is based off of Arabian Nights. 1001 Arabian Nights, is that what it's called?
I think so.
Yeah. And it's the story of Prince Ahmed, a wizard, comes to like a festival, I guess, and shows off his flying horse that Prince Ahmed's dad, the king, wants, and he says he won't give it to him for gold, but he'll give it to him for his daughter's hand in marriage. And when Prince Ahmed steps in to intervene, the wizard tricks him onto the horse that Prince Ahmed doesn't know how to control, and he flies up into the sky. So the king's man arrests the wizard. Prince Ahmed eventually figures out how to fly the horse and lands on a magical island where he meets a woman who uses feathers to fly around, and he seduces her. But then the wizard breaks out of his chains, turns into a bat, and comes to that island and tricks Prince Ahmed into falling into a hole, and then runs off with the woman. Then Ahmed is able to escape from the hole and enlists the help of a witch who is the enemy of the wizard, to go rescue the feather woman that he loves from the emperor of China. But then they're attacked by like the magical beasts from the magical island that the feather woman is from, and there he runs into Aladdin, who tells his story in flashback, which is about how the wizard came to him to help him get the genie's lamp, and Aladdin wouldn't give the wizard the lamp, so the wizard buried him underground, and the genie helped him escape, and then he built a big palace, and he married Prince Ahmed's sister, and then he's like, and then Aladdin's like, and that brings us to you, when you saved me from this monster. And then the witch arrives, and the witch and the wizard fight to the death. And then they, everyone lives happily ever after because the wizard dies and everyone gets to be with the woman they love.
after battling hordes of demons.
Yeah. So I guess, Patrick, what did you think of the movie?
I was kind of surprised this was directed by a woman because it's so unbelievably sexist, but I don't know.
1926.
Do what?
1926.
Yeah, but knowing that Lotte Reiniger was, I guess, associated with the Nazis, if not exactly,
nope,
you know, in with them. Well, didn't
nope.
Nope. She ran away.
Well, yeah,
but there were other animators who also worked on this film.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Weren't some of the people who worked on it associated with the Nazis?
Well, the Nazis didn't come to power for like 7 years after this movie was made.
Right. But they were, you know.
Yeah.
Ilk, I suppose.
Right. But she actually left. Like, she was one of the people who was like, she was, I'm not going to stay here because I don't like Nazis.
Okay. Well,
that's a little different then.
Nevertheless,
saying that she was from Germany and knew a couple people who turned out to be Nazis doesn't really
matter.
Germany was a weird place back then. That. So, you know.
I didn't like this film. I thought the animation was interesting looking, but it wasn't interesting enough for me to stay invested in it at all, especially after several of the major plot points turn out to just be men sort of forcing themselves on women and the women being okay with that. So I didn't really like this movie.
What other seduction method is there?
I would say that I did like this movie, but I came close to not liking it for the same reasons that Patrick just mentioned. But there were a few the style I thought was pretty consistently awesome. And there were a few just like really cool animated sort of set pieces that for me at least were like beautiful enough and interesting enough that I was still engaged with it. There was like a chunk of the movie that was kind of slow and boring, but for the most part it had my attention in spite of the sexism and also racism. We should mention that.
Yeah,
it's also very racist.
I was about to mention that if nobody else did. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I thought the movie had some really like almost, well, sort of hilarious ideas based on like exoticism of everything from Africa to China to women in general, also female sexuality, all that stuff. There was just a bunch of stuff that was in there that we could just talk about. But I also liked the style. I loved the little shadow play that was going on with the colorful hues in the background switching. I loved like there was a scene where there was like next to a lake and the blue hue with the shadows kind of worked really well for me. And I felt like it was really atmospheric and kind of really effective. But again, a little too bad that this was in the service of something so outrageously racist and so on and so forth. But I can still, I guess, appreciate that it was done in a really interesting style, for sure. I've never watched an animated movie like this one, that's for sure.
So is that a, I like
oh,
it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like the style, hate the rest. I don't know. Same as you, I don't know. I wouldn't say I like the movie. It's hard for me. It was hard for me in the end to just like it, because the rest was
pretty. I like the movie.
Sweet.
Ruben, I liked it a lot. But it is like, I mean, it's a straight up predecessor of like everything Disney was gonna do. In the sense of like, you know, I was watching it, I was like, wow, it's just like everything that Disney is gonna portray for like the next 80 years is like comes straight from this movie. And in fact, one scene where the wizard and witch battle basically just gets straight up ripped for the Sword and the Stone.
I was going to mention that if no one else
thinking
did.
About that too.
It's the exact same thing almost, except for in this case, the wizard is the bad guy, and in Sword and the Stone, the wizard's the good guy.
And the witch was
like, yeah.
I thought though, I will say, I thought Disney's version of it was a little bit more clever in their. The way they ended that fight.
I don't remember how they ended.
It if you'll remember, it ends with Merlin instead of, you know, trying to become a bigger, badder animal, just turns into a virus and makes her sick, which I thought, I was like, huh, it's a really creative way of winning a fight like that.
Germ warfare wins every time.
He went small. He was thinking small. But yeah, I thought that Ruben, to what you were saying, like, I thought there were some impressive things like that. That fight sequence is cool with them just like turning into different animals, and the way they animated that must have been really difficult to do. But again, it wasn't impressive enough for me to overlook the massive flaws with the rest of the film.
I mean, it's completely fair. How do you feel about every other film from the 20s?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about like specifically, I think there are good films from the 20s, like you know, Buster Keaton's Sherlock Jr., for example, that was on our canon.
Yeah. I haven't rewatched that recently, but The General was from the same year as this, and I much preferred Prince Ahmed to The General, personally.
I like The General better.
I've yet to see The General, so I would see it first.
I would have to rewatch it, but still, yeah. I'm sure that Keaton had a lot of his own weirdness going on at the time, that's for sure. I'm trying to think of a movie from the 20s that wasn't had all the whatever exoticism racism going on through and through.
M?
I haven't watched that many movies from the 20s, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, M is sort of it benefits by not having any. I think it's 29.
I thought it was 31, but okay. Yeah.
I thought it was a little bit later. I thought it was like early 30s.
Yeah, I was thinking of M too, but it was a bit later. And Metropolis definitely has some weird stuff going on. That's for sure.
Yeah. Metropolis is extremely sexist movie.
Yeah. No, sure. I mean, I guess you could say that, but like, I think that Prince Ahmed was wearing this stuff like pretty much all over the place. Like, it was really hard to avoid that in the whole movie, you know?
Yeah. But I guess I just, you know, maybe this is like a slippery out, but for me it's just like a fairy tale. So like, it doesn't bother me as much, as opposed to like when it's happening, like real life people doing it in like every Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin movie.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think at a certain point it bothered me less, only because like I just didn't care about the story. Like, even if you changed the context, like, it's such a light, like, loose story that, like, basically has almost nothing underneath it that, like, it could have been about almost anything. And so for me, at a certain point in the movie, it just became about looking at the pictures and that they were consistently attractive enough that I didn't really... Like, I think there was only... I probably would have rated it even higher if there wasn't, like, a chunk towards the 30-minute mark that was just like also kind of boring on top of everything else that was going on in it. I don't know. I mean, like, I would be curious to see what kind of like anti-colonial literature or ideas were even floating around in the 20s, because I feel like this early on in modernism, at least, like, everyone was pretty okay with colonialism as an idea. They're like, let's go to these other countries and see how cool they live, and it'll be great. I don't know, but
I did also think that Prince Ahmed was kind of a jerk. Like,
he's a huge jerk
because he steals Peri Banu's flying costume, the princess from the island of Whack Whack, which I thought was
AKA
really funny name for an island.
Her clothes. But, he steals her clothes. It's not just like her flying.
And then he spies on her.
Well, yeah, but then
while
when he meets
bathing.
Aladdin, like, the first thing he does when he meets Aladdin, he's now like, "Are you okay?" He's like, "Where's the lamp?" He's just like Batman. He's like, "Where's the lamp?"
That's funny, because the moment that I put on my moments list of this was when the wizard turns into a bat, and then from my little wink, description, I put "I am Batman."
Yeah, I was thinking Dracula, like back when Dracula still turned into a bat.
No.
You know.
Yeah, that's definitely the actual reference. Yeah. I just put "I am Batman" as a joke.
I was thinking that too. No, of course.
I also thought that the harem of lusty women was pretty weird.
Was
he just
so
like
weird.
Goes in and then all of a sudden
he basically
they can't
raped
stop
the guy, and then he can't stop kissing like one of them and then running away from them and then kissing another one and running away.
So
that was
like,
hilarious
that scene, but yeah.
Maybe this is just like a weirdo exception for me, but like, do you guys have this response when you like read the Odyssey or the Iliad? Because like, to me, that's kind of what this is. And like, I don't know. I guess like in my head, I defend it as like no one takes their ideas of how men and women are supposed to act from the Odyssey and the Iliad. Just like they don't take it from like, I don't know. Like, none of them are humans, so, like, I kind of don't think of them as men and women. Like, I kind of think
of
them as
I think it's more
like ciphers.
It's less about concrete men and women, more about, like, the perpetuated ideas about, you know, how the magical island of Wak Wak or whatever the hell, you know, like, that sort of stuff. How the Chinese emperor was basically a grinning... a huge guy with a huge grin.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like,
I forgot about him.
Like, that was just, I don't know. Like, I totally get why you think that to take this less seriously in an animated movie from the 20s, now especially, but, you know, I just felt like that, it's hard for me to just not respond to that, however, you know, animated it is.
Yeah, the animation.
However animated
it is. Yeah, the animations of the Chinese characters were pretty, like, spot-on racist caricatures with the, like, slanted eyes and everything. I was like, oh, brother.
And also,
well,
didn't like,
gonna
the...
take the position of defending racism
and
sexism.
Sure. Weren't, like, the title cards, like, Carla noticed, I watched it with Carla, she knows that, like, every time there was, like, a blend from one scene to the next, like, there was the outline of the Star of David appeared or something? Was that... Did you guys notice that? That was kind of random.
I did not notice that at all.
Yeah, there's a background that they use for the title cards that has the Star of David in it. Although I'm not, I don't believe the Star of David is only a Jewish symbol.
Sure, right. I just wondered what it meant then in this context. If it meant anything.
I think it's pretty. Yeah, Middle East probably.
Yeah, sure. I mean, back then, like in the Ottoman Empire, there was still probably there were a lot of Jews living in the Ottoman Empire. So I think that that symbol had a lot of meaning there. But yeah, I just didn't really get why it was there. That was all.
Yeah. Sweet, sweet Wikipedia. The Star of David is not and was never a uniquely Jewish symbol. Has to do with Arabic literature and the Kabbalah, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's just like, this
you
is,
go.
A, this
you
is
go.
An ancient Middle Eastern
It became
symbol.
A uniquely Jewish symbol about 10 years after this film.
Right.
And it started being used as a way to mark people who were going to be executed.
Right.
Boy, symbology.
Yeah.
Just like the swastika was not a bad symbol for thousands of years. It was just a
peace symbol,
you know,
right?
Sort of,
or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh, brother.
There's a, like, almost anywhere you can go in America, if the city is old enough, you can find a swastika on some building, like, hidden in the crevice that people haven't. We have them on our city hall. Like, you just have to, you know, like.
Oh boy.
They're not the same direction as the Nazi swastikas, but they're there.
Right.
Just too many connotations. Just connoting everywhere.
I really like the snake fight. To change the subject completely.
Uh-huh. When
there were some
between
were some
Ahmed
stunning,
and the snake in the pit.
There were some stunning visual moments. I think my favorite that I can remember is when Prince Ahmed is hiding in the like the grasses and spying on Peri Banu, where he's got like the he's got it like curled around him in the circle, like the frond or fern, whatever it is, of the leaves. He's got it curled around him, and he looks like he's this little, I don't know, like a like an emblem or a, some sort of medallion.
Embryo.
Yeah, so he's like, well, he looks like he's some sort of like little medallion that you could just like put a chain on and wear around your neck in this little circle as like some sort of symbol of power. I thought it looked pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I felt like I got tired of the shadow thing though in most of the fights, because it just seemed like a lot of the same things were happening. Like, you know, he was like throwing rocks at things and they would just sort of fall out of the sky or whatever. And I was like, okay, the demon fight's kind of all over the place madness.
Mm-hmm.
So by the end of it, I was kind of burned out on it, but...
But he kills the snake and uses it as a ladder.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
No one to waste
the
death.
The snake didn't strike first, though. I thought that made me kind of sad.
Yeah, yeah.
The sexism and racism didn't bother me, but the snake was just checking him out, and he just started strangling it. Snake was like, hey, what's up? And he's like, ah!
Snake was like, no!
My family!
He could have just asked him, hey, can you give me a ride out of here? I'm kind of stuck.
You think that was somehow a symbol for him hating his own... sexual drive or something, like him being pissed off at his penis.
Oh, I don't
like,
know.
Like, God, you look at what trouble you brought me into. Again, damn you.
Or women,
boy.
If you go back,
yeah,
to
or women.
Eve,
yeah, right.
Oh God, yeah, there sure. We go.
I thought in the beginning when the wizard tries to steal the princess. I thought that was really effectively creepy. I was really creeped out by that scene. Like when he kind of like strolls into her and starts like grabbing her and pulling her out. I thought that was really, really, really creepy. And the fact that Reininger managed to be so expressive with these basic like shadow puppets or whatever, like 2D shadow puppets, I thought that was really, really cool. Like, I was surprised by how expressive those figures managed to be.
Yeah, I think what made them so expressive was the arm movements. I thought the arm movements really, like, sold the emotions that they were feeling, whatever they might be. I do feel kind of like the emotions were always like, ah! or just like... give me this thing, you fool! Like, those were, like, the big emotions that the arms conveyed. Yeah. Or they were, like,
although there was
grabbing
one time,
somebody, or just, like, on their head.
There was one time where he, like, has a really funny shrug. I can't remember what the context was, but the prince just goes, meh? And it's...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's really hard.
Was that in the scene, in this bordello scene or whatever that was? Like,
probably.
I thought it was there. That was just a crazy scene.
To talk about something other than the animation, I did actually like the storytelling technique, or at least it was surprising when he runs into Aladdin and Aladdin tells him like his entire story in flashback, and he's like, and now you saved me. Like, it was like, he's like, and then I got attacked by this monster and then I met you. And I thought that was kind of funny. Like, kind of how, I don't know, like, I enjoyed the flashback and then I also felt like it was kind of silly that, like, that's how flashbacks work.
Right. And now we're here together.
Did anyone else miss the voices of Robin Williams and Gilbert Gottfried the whole movie? They were waiting for them
Gilbert
to show
Gottfried.
Up.
I was thinking about this movie this morning, and I was thinking about one scene in particular in Aladdin when Jafar is like coming out of his secret laboratory or whatever in the palace, and Princess Jasmine walks up behind him and he like starts to close the door really quickly, and Iago's just walking out and he's just going and he gets the door closed on him, and for some reason like I really liked Gilbert Gottfried just going
I I think it's funny that that movie was made almost 70 years later and is not significantly less racist or sexist than this movie.
True that.
By funny, I mean extremely depressing.
Definitely more classist than this movie.
Like, I don't know if you've ever taken notice of the fact that, like, everybody who is, like, good in Aladdin, like, although they kind of look Middle Eastern, they look way more white than Jafar, who is evil.
Of course they do.
Who looks, you know, really gross.
I mean, the Sultan, like, yeah, the Sultan in that movie just looks like a straight up, like, white dude.
Yeah. Yeah, he just looks like Santa Claus.
He's just totally white. What's happening here?
Yeah. I mean, not that that was anything new for Disney at the time or whatever, or that they didn't.
No, it's actually 70 years old. Yeah. They watch this movie and they're like, just do this over and over again. It's the story of every Disney film. Snow White, Sleepy Beauty.
Lion King.
Like,
everybody's...
Lion King doesn't have the, like, part where the man convinces the woman, like, tracks her down or whatever, saves her, blah, blah. But yeah.
Yeah, but, like, I was thinking more along the lines of the dark equals bad.
The,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and the creepy racism.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Even among lions.
Yeah.
Racism and classism.
Patton Oswalt has a joke about how he was, like, in a Starbucks with his daughter, and there was, like, a black guy who looked like the... had, like, a big beard, like the monkey in The Lion King, and his daughter starts shouting and pointing at him, "It's a monkey! It's a monkey!"
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Thanks, Disney.
That's on his newest stand-up. It's pretty funny.
God.
So, yep, good job, Disney. Making toddlers into racists at an early age.
See, animation matters, Ruben. It matters.
It does matter. That's why I like Tangled so much, is because it's pretty surprisingly not sexist.
Still a little racist. Not like,
I mean, I guess in the disinclusion, were there anybody but white people entangled?
Well, I mean,
or is that the way in which it's
I remember
racist?
It was actually Shirin that pointed it out to me because I didn't notice, but just that the adoptive mother is definitely more ethnic looking with like the dark curly hair and like slightly darker skin.
I guess so. Slight.
Every little bit matters.
I think that one of the most hilarious things about Aladdin is that Jasmine, in order to pass as poor, basically puts on a hoodie, and then she's poor. That's all it takes. She basically still has on all her like princess makeup and all that other stuff, and like
she still has on all her jewels. Like she's
poor now. I got the poor hoodie on.
The shroud of poverty.
Shroud.
I like how Aladdin, like the movie centers on her trusting Aladdin. Like it's an important line, like twice. He's like, "Do you trust me?" And like their entire relationship is based on him lying to her.
It's awesome.
Something that I didn't even realize about Tangled is that the voice of the adoptive mother is the wife of Dr. Octopus in Spider-Man 2.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
What a canon connection.
Yeah.
So she actually is on our canon twice.
Nice.
Yeah. She's...
Yeah. She's like Kirsten Dunst. She's in the company of Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah.
And what?
Are there any others?
Cary Grant?
Are there any others?
I suppose.
Did Cary Grant make it twice?
Did he? I don't know.
I don't know. I know His Girl Friday made it. I don't know about.
I know we've done a lot of him in the on the podcast, but
yeah, we've done two Cary Grant movies as podcasts. Only Angels Have Wings and Blonde Venus.
Time to make some statistics.
Yep.
Need to keep track of that shit.
Mm. All right.
Right. So, do we have anything more to say about the adventure?
Yeah, I was gonna say this is probably gonna be a pretty short podcast because there's really.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. There's no like themes or anything. I mean,
It's pretty broad as a story. It's pretty much just a story.
It's a fairy tale. Yeah. So. That's what it is.
Digging much deeper.
Really, it doesn't.
It wears all of its flaws and its good qualities on its sleeve, pretty much.
It seems like, I mean, it's pretty true of all mythology, but since I was first introduced to the idea of mythology through video games, stuff like someone getting the magic armor and sword that lets you win is always will remind me of video games.
That's right, he does get the magical weapons that will help him kill demons in this, doesn't he?
Oh yeah.
Alright. It's not a very long movie either, it's only about an hour long.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. But I think we talked more about the Garden of Words, though that movie was shorter. But
that movie is just more fun to make fun of. Yeah.
There was more to unpack there too, because there were more questions that we didn't have answers for, and this one's pretty much just
why did that happen? what sense did that make?
Why am I watching this?
What's wrong with me?
Apparently, this is my weakness or whatever. Though I like sexist animated movies more than you guys do.
Well, I think lucky for you, there's a lot of animated movies made in that time. They're pretty much all sexist and racist.
There we go.
Yeah, I'm pretty curious to watch more of her movies.
Yeah, me too. I would like to definitely check out some more about her, because especially maybe something later, maybe a little bit later.
Yeah, she did up for a really long time, until like the 50s. Mm-hmm.
Let's queue it up. It's a marathon.
It's true. Let's do it.
By the way, my suggestion for a movie from the 20s that is not particularly sexist is The Seashell and the Clergyman, which is a movie directed by Germaine Duloc. And it's like, I mean, it's a avant-garde movie, but it's basically about like this priest who's like sees a woman and goes crazy and it's like becomes an awful person. And it's about like how terrifying male sexuality is.
That sounds interesting. I would like to see that, because I am pretty terrified by male sexuality, honestly.
Who isn't?
By my own.
Same. My other favorite movies from, I was looking at my list, and pretty much like all my favorite movies from the 20s are avant-garde films.
I can imagine that there's some Russian movies made in the 20s that aren't as, you know, obviously colonialist or racist inflected, since Russia was less involved in that whole thing at the time. Plus, it was like most filmmakers at the time were like highly theoretically active people, very ideologically active, that were like, I think, more aware of certain things than maybe other filmmakers.
Yeah, but that, I wonder if that Mother movie is good. I was supposed to watch it for my film history
who
class,
did that
but
one?
I didn't. Pudovkin, I think.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was supposed to watch it, but I was absent that day, so I can't tell you for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't really watched
I'll bet
that
it is.
Much either. Yeah.
We'll
I bet it is. All right.
All right. Prince Ahmed.
Prince Ahmed.
Okay, everyone. Thanks for listening to the podcast, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.